Hello and welcome to this exploring session. I'm your host, Robert Crichton, and this is a look at occupation and idleness. Now, since the plague started, our normal production schedule has been somewhat frustrated. So we've been doing a lot of play read-throughs and explorations via Zoom, which has been released on YouTube. Some of these are now being lightly edited and turned into episodes for the podcast as well. And this is what we've done with occupation and idleness, partly because it is one of the Winchester dialogues which we have already looked at. We've already looked at Lucidus and Dubius, which is also available on the podcast. Because of the way we recorded this, because people have different internet connections, there are some dropouts in the recording. I've tidied up what I can. I have lightly edited some of the gaps and breakdowns between sections and removed a few stumbles and errors. But this is, by its nature, an archive, a recording of our first stumble through of the text. We enjoyed it immensely. It's a play from the middle of the 15th century, maybe even earlier, and it really is the earliest example of the kind of morality debate play that we'll find over the next 100 years or so until the early days of Elizabeth. So it really is a very important play, a fascinating play, and one that we hope to be able to do more with in the future. If you're interested in catching the original of this recording or any of the other exploring sessions that we're currently doing on YouTube, there is a Beyond Shakespeare YouTube channel now, and there are about 50 plays that we've done over the last nearly 3 months now, which you can watch in their entirety. I say some of them I will be editing down and turning into podcast episodes in the future, but I'm also hoping that we're going to be able to start turning over some of the promised content that I've been working on. We have a good 4 or 5 plays, full cast audio adaptations that are pretty much fully recorded, and I need to now get back into the editing process and getting those out to you, and hopefully we'll clear some of the backlog by the end of the year. It's all very conditional on the state of the world and also the state of our finances. If you would like to help support the work that we're doing, do become a patron. Go to www.patreon.com/beyondshakespeare and become a patron today. After such rambling, it's time to go over to our exploration of occupation and idleness, and so you'll be hearing my voice, but in a slightly different way. Enjoy. Hello and welcome to this Beyond Exploring session, and today we are looking at occupation and idleness, one of the Winchester dialogues from the late-ish 15th century. It is a dialogue between three protagonists. It is not 100% certain whether this was actually designed to be performed or whether it is simply a dialogue to be read. There's plenty of other texts where people use a dialogue form to get across an argument going back much earlier than this. But we always like, on the podcast, we like to always think that if it walks like a duck and it quacks like a duck, then it's a duck. And that's the question for today. Is this a performable text? Is this what it is? Or is this something that we look at and note and move on for future consideration? To answer that question tonight, I have a team of excited readers who we're going to introduce now, one at a time, in no particular order whatsoever, because we're swapping around readers. We only have three parts to read, but we have a glut of people tonight. So, reading at least initially, Idleness will be...
Hello, my name is Sasha Cooper, and I'm a professional actress, performer, and voiceover artist, and all-round performer based in Brighton in the UK.
And reading occupation, certainly initially, is...
Liza Graham, actor, singer, and general Renaissance and medieval text bard, wearer of round glasses in London.
And readings for the first half, Doctrine is...
I am Greg, and I'm from Stratford-on-Avon.
And later down the line, reading Doctrine will be...
Oh, hi, I'm Ruth Evans. I'm a specialist in later medieval English literature, and I do other medieval literatures as well. And I'm based in St. Louis, Missouri, in the Midwest of the US.
And new to the group tonight, reading one of the other parts to be discovered further along the lines is...
Hi, my name's Ian. I'm a learning practice coordinator in a local theatre in Manchester, UK.
Excellent. And that is the team for tonight. I am your host, Robert Crichton. I am ideally not going to be reading anything because I'm going to spend most of the time comparing our rough modern adaptation as we've started tidying up bits of the text for modern readers. And I'm going to be pursuing that and checking that as we go along. But otherwise, I'll be leading the debate about what this is and how it goes. So the text opens, as we have it, with occupation, and it does feel very much like the beginning of a play with occupation speaking perhaps to the audience. I don't know. Let's find out. Occupation, it's over to you.
The mighty maker that made all thing, he meddle his mercy ever in our mend. Our bales he abate and to bliss us bring, as he was our founder and we come of his kind. For all the wealth of the world is turned to wrangling, and friendship is now full faint for to find. Again, equity and right the people be jangling, and full few there be that hereof have mind. The cause is this, for now reigneth treason, there that should be reason, but ye beware in season, ye labor all amiss. For we may see a great example every day of hunger and death before our eye. From the pricking of pestilence escape we nay may, from winds and weathers that cometh from the sky. Therefore, let right reign and forsake simony. Rule you by reason and labor for your meat. In true occupation, sell thou and buy. Deceive no man with subtlety in cold, nay in heat, but sow reason and truth. Let ease and favor from thee flee, and take counsel and equity. Else lose ye heaven so free. And meseemeth that were ruth, and eke great shame. Now, if there be any here that my name would espear, I tell ye, sovereigns all in fear, occupation, that is my name. I busy full basely in cold and in heat, winds may weathers we may not spare, with great grievance I go my living to get. Oft weary and wet-shod I suffer muchel care, to session or to sizes if that I fare, because I have a little gathered to heap. In such plea no skill I can, thus am I in care. There I stand and study as mad as any sheep, for woe, for I had liefer been at plough, to God I make a vow, thresh in a barn, reap and mow. Therefore I hight occupation wheresoever I go, on ground. Here I think to abide, to rest me a little tide, in peace, both safe and sound.
Ah, rest you merry, I make a vow. Why say ye not welcome now? Be God, there be many of you that I know well and fine. This worthy man, though I it say, he hath known me many a day. For he and I spent in fay are both is thrusted wine. Ah, sir, give God you tomorrow. Lo, sir, this good man will be my borrow had I had need. Nay, good sir, laugh me not to scorn. I trow ye have your knowledge forlorn for my simple weed. Yea, this weed will serve me well and fine. Oft thou hast be wet sith thou were mine, both at the ale and at the wine in the high street, while I have aught I will spend. When I have none, God will send. Thus every company I will amend and gather fellowship to help, for I have good meat and drink. When I am full, I will swink. Now by my troth, as I think, I am a sly clerk. Therefore, I tell you express, my name is called Idleness. I keep not to arise to matins, nay mass, nay to none other work. For to no labour I cast me, but ever to sloth I fast me. And if ye will attest me, ye shall find me quaint. Quaintly go I, lo, as pretty as a pie, lo. What say ye thereto? Who could make me attaint? Behold now this gracious face, how gallantly I take my trace. There is now none such in this place, should I not do thus. Lo, how jolly get I, and none fellowship let I, and but few met I, but they with me truce and gone. Hey, what is that yonder gadling that standeth yonder all straddling? I will write for all his babbling what he is anon. All hail, good man, and well found.
I'm just going to pause there. That was nicely done, people. two characters have introduced themselves to the audience. Who are they? What clues have we got? There's an interesting question about who's laughing when they talk, "Nay, good sir, laugh me not to scorn." Is that occupation laughing at idleness? There was that moment there, or is that an expectation from the audience?
I absolutely think idleness is singling out different people in the audience here and and saying, you know, I know you, I know you, I know you, ooh, I know you.
Definitely an interactive piece, this one.
Yeah, we're getting clues very, very early on that this is designed to be performed, not necessarily read. That speech makes no sense out of context otherwise.
I think when idleness refers to the clothing that he's wearing, that's another indication of it being performed. You know, for my simple weed, yet this weed will serve me well and fine, you know, and is pointing to the clothing that he's wearing. I think it's performed.
Yeah, I think we've answered that question very, very quickly. So that's that one down. We can affirm that it is indeed a duck. So what's the difference, major differences between occupation and idleness in terms of how they address the audience, how they're dressed? You know, what clues have we got there?
Well, idleness certainly doesn't see, it's not a straightforward opposition between, you know, the busy bee figure that's always hard at work carrying out Christian good works, and idleness is just like a, you know, vice figure, because idleness is picking out people in the audience and is trying to get them on side. So the audience is, you know, the audience is being enlisted there on idleness's side.
I think occupation must be dressed as a farm laborer, because he talks about reaping, mowing, he talks about sheep.
Right.
And he flags up that he's no good at court cases. He doesn't have any clerkly skills. So he loves farm work and he doesn't like going to court.
Whereas idleness explicitly says, "I am a sly clerk. You know, I am a, I have an education. I like sitting around in Zoom meetings." I don't want to go outside.
No, he's basically this flamboyant, lazy character, or she, if however you care to cast it.
However.
Yeah.
You know.
I think there's no reason why we don't play around with that. I don't think we've got any clues yet as to pronouns, do we?
Not as yet.
I think there's an indication that occupation's a gentleman just because of the, "I will wipe for all his babbling, what is he anon?" I'm assuming. Oh no, actually, if that's addressing the audience, it could be.
Mm. No, I think it is occupation that he's talking about.
Yeah.
The one at the very end, yeah. I think by that point he is. That yonder gadling, straddling, babbling bit, which suggests that he's vaguely been listening to some of that, perhaps. But then there's always a bit of a suggestion of that, even if they're not on stage.
Now, I wanted to flag up one more thing before we carry on, and this is really a question for Ruth. That first stanza is the Gawain stanza, right?
I was thinking about that. Is that a ball and wheel, which is the Sir Gawain and the Green Knight, which are stanzas of varying length? It always ends with a five-line bob and wheel. But that doesn't continue in the other stanzas here, does it? Or not in the same way that it does in the first one. It is a Gawain stanza, except Gawain doesn't rhyme. The main stanzas of Gawain don't rhyme. The main part of the stanza, it's only the bob and wheel, the last five lines that rhymes.
You're right, the main bit alliterates. But does that stanza recur often outside of Gawain in the corpus we have?
No. Not really, no. But you do get bob and wheel in other texts, you know, and a lot of Middle English drama.
Yeah. It's true, actually, you're right. The Second Shepherds has it, doesn't it?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. It's also, there's an awful lot of things that are flashing memories, you know, just turns of phrase that, you know, you find elsewhere that just keep turning up. So there's a lot of connection there. It's interesting talking about this, behold now this gracious face. You know, that suddenly flashes to Lucifer a tad. Sovereigns all in fear, that you know, these standard turns of phrase that you get popping up in
There's a lot of formulaic phrases, but there's enough variation and liveliness to stop you thinking that it's just
stop. Oh yeah. No, it's not getting in the way or anything at all. No. Okay, let's get into some dialogue as opposed to monologue. So, occupation and idleness, continue, please. Let's go from the end of idleness. All hail, good man. Let's go from there.
All hail, good man, and well found.
Welcome, young man, on this ground.
Why, sire, tell me this stound. Know ye not me?
Of thee, son, what is thy name?
Lo, now ariseth game. I am like to take blame, but I the better where be. I must change my name, ye whiz, and tell him busyness my name is. Ye forgot thus it is. This is a pretty while. And when I am with him at fess, I will take mine own ease. To sleep enough he shall not cheese. I think to him beguile.
Just going to pause there, because that's clearly an aside, isn't it? That whole sequence.
It is.
It is, isn't it? So that's
very
one hell of an aside there. Okay, and now you're talking back to occupation again.
Sir, I wonder ye have forgot me, Iwis, and I have served you ere this. For busyness my name is. Sir, know ye that name?
Busyness? Yea, in good faith, he hath served me many a day.
Now in good faith, leave me ye may, I am the same.
Art thou busyness? I trow nay. Meseemeth by thy simple array.
Sir, should I wear my best every day? I have 10 or 12 of good gowns in my press, and furs of great richess. Of this man I take witness, ye may ask him yourself.
Then, what labour can ye best now?
Thresh in your barn, or go to plough, ripe, mow, and eke sow, and other husbandry. Go to market, buy and sell, and keep a household I can well. With sheep and swine I can mell. Whereto should I lie?
Wilt thou be with me all this year, and thou shalt be my partner?
Yea, be truth with good cheer, but I have no money in store.
Give me thy truth in this stound, and have here 10 pound. And thou govern it well on this ground, and thou had need, come fetch more.
Oh, yes, heartily, sir, have ye no doubt. Now have I need to look about, both within and without, that nothing be amiss. I have here in this purse 10 pound of gold. It is no worse. To the cooks will I me truce anon, so have I bliss. Good sir, tell me in same, what shall I clape your name?
Sir, I say by Saint James, my name is Occupation.
Ah, Occupation, be my fay, is a good name and a worthy, to be commended honestly in field and eke in town. But sir, go ye home or over the sea, your household and your main, and then in haste come hider and see. Tarry not too long.
Farewell then, in God's name.
Now in faith he were to blame, that would do thee any wrong. Walk on. God let thee never the foul, artful mad to trust thee. But this gold shalt thou never see, so God me amend. For in Broad Street, Samphail, it shall be spent in good the tale of wine and ale I will not fail. Thither now I am bent. For and I would beset this gold here on sheep or lamb, they be dear, and also a bad gear soon would hemstroy. If I beset it in cow or veal, paraventure some thief might hemsteal. Nay, nay, therewith will I not deal, such merchandise I defy. If I would build any house, then might come some fire and it bren, that maketh many a way to ren and take the town's end. Nay, nay, I will not so in fay, but to the tavern I will go my way, and to the cook's parmafay thither will I wend. But and occupation come by the way, ask me, sir, I thee pray. For we two have loved many a day, these years four or five, till this be spent every dell, full happy, full hell. I will no longer with him mell, I go hence well blithe.
The wry reverend that on the road was rent, he save you, my sovereign, seemly in sea, that was blindfold and buffeted and his blood spent, from the threatening of thraldom to make us all free, and the brenning blossom that bright is of blee, with her features so fortunate, void us of our foe. Excellent empress of high dignity, conclude here conclusions, as ye well can, through your son's might. For truly will I every day, whithersoever I take my way, in holy church, if that I may, of thy son have a sight. Then to my labor will I go, till and travail in much woe, my livelihood to get. We may not spare wind nay rain, but go to plough in croft and plain, and oft we labor again main in dry and in wet. And I pray you, tell me an you can, saw any of you busyness, my man, sin I was last here? For he is so long out with my gold walked about, by my truth, I am in doubt he is in some danger. I note what is best, till I have some tidings of him here. Here I think to rest.
I'm just going to pause there, because there's obviously, what wasn't immediately clear, but is very clear now, that there's exiting and there's time gaps going on in those speeches. So when occupation says farewell then in God's name, definitely that's an exit. And idleness is left to have the floor, presumably again disappearing while occupation comes back on and does their prayer before labour and worries about poor business. Worrying about poor business. Where's busyness gone? I went off on a tangent because I was getting such a powerful sense of deja vu through a lot of that, and I was trying to figure out from what. I think lots of things is the answer. There was so much there that was ringing bells elsewhere. So this little con that's going on with idleness and occupation here, it's very dynamic. There's a, you know, it's not very long, but there's a lot going on here. The thoughts from the room, please, because I'm babbling.
Just to reinforce the thing about the what now seems obvious is that this must have been acted because, well, there's two things. I mean, one is the asides, you know, that idleness is making that suggests taking the audience into, you know, his or her confidence. And then the thing that, you know, and I pray you tell me, and you can say, saw you any business, my man, is again enlisting the audience in playing the game.
Yeah, it's a very dynamic text. And so what is the goal? How did he, occupation, how did idleness extract the money? What was the argument there? What was going on?
Oh, he asked him to go into business with him, and he just said, oh, I would, but I have no money. So he was actually offered the money just from that little white lie. Just to get a bit of quick cash behind him.
Occupation also refers to him later as busyness, my man. Mm. So I think it seems like a hiring fair. And it seems as though, yes, he offers busyness to be his partner and stay with him for a year, and then he gives him the wage up front, which might not be the smartest idea.
And then Idelgiris gets this rather fun speech about, you know, the fun that can be had with all this wonderful money.
You're basically having a nice chat about food and drink.
Yeah. These are all threads we're going to see repeatedly over the next 100 years. This is fascinating. Sorry, I'm genuinely a bit stumped here by all the possibilities that come out of this. This is fascinating.
I just wondered if when Idleness has managed to extract this 10 pounds of gold from occupation, and when he says, she says, I have here in this purse 10 pounds of gold, whether that's an aside to the audience as well, you know.
It is an aside.
I think it probably is.
Mm. That's definitely an aside.
So lots of play. You agree? I mean, there's lots of play acting here, which is fun.
Yeah, no, it's really fun and really dynamic. Okay, the two are thrown back together again at some speed, so you get that impression of some time has passed. I don't know how much time, but enough time to have spent the money, presumably. which suggests, as I say, an exit from Idleness rather than just hanging back.
There's also a pun as well. I realise this because you get this in the Pardoner's Tale. Busyness doesn't just mean the action of being busy; it also means business.
Yeah, yeah.
And business, my man, is, you know, there's the pun.
Yeah. Where did we get to, line-wise? Did we get
to the top of Idleness, isn't it?
Yeah, so...
Yeah. Aha, Godspeed, I am come.
That's yes, right. So let's see what you're up to.
Aha, Godspeed, I am come. I have right well wet my throat, aware, a little stone aroam, for I am very cup-shot. Ah, my brain... Ginneth to rout and turneth as round as any ball. By my troth, I am in great doubt. Me seemeth the sky will on me fall. I am ill, aghast. I come from the cook's now, and to God I make a vow. There have I well broke my fast. I have eat and drunk of the best, till me thought the dry way slither. And my master's gold, so have I rest. It is spent altogether on good meat and drink. For be God and Our Lady both, I bought therewith neither clout ni cloth. For be my partner never so wroth, a while will I go wink.
Abide, a word with you.
Ah, welcome, I make a vow. I have sought you wide and now these 2 days all three.
Soughtest thou me? I pray thee where?
Be God, on foot, there you were.
Such a messenger, evil he fare, so to seek me. Meseemest thou cometh late from the nail.
Ah, be God, that is a true tale. There have I welfare.
Now, by God, I stand in doubt that thou hast spent my money out. Then am I in great care.
Ah, sir. That money is a go, that there they had be such due. Therefore mine heart is sore.
Ah, sire, sir, foul mote thee befall, that ever I met thee in this hall. My gold thou hast lore, what thou saidest busyness thy name hight.
So I did, be this light, and yet I did lie. But now I tell thee in game, Idleness is my name.
I swear by St. Jane, thou art a wily pie. Son, and thou wilt to me hark, I will teach thee some other work.
What, wouldst thou make me a clerk that I will not begin? For I will go play me and royally array me.
Hark, son, thou say me, wilt thou worship win?
Worship? How should I come thereto?
With manner and manhood, son, lo, and be never thine own foe. To my words thou hark.
Who teacheth that manner, I pray thee?
Truly, son, as I say thee, doctrine, that worthy clerk.
Doctrine? What man is he?
A master of divinity, of the university, to teach thee to wax wise.
Wilt thou so? Nay, I will not with thee go. I have espied thee too wise.
Son, leave thy fantasy and turn to grace, I say thee.
I know. I make to God a vow. I will eat as good as thou. Go set to grass thy horse or thy cow, or else, sir, go play thee.
And who shall find thee meat and drink all day?
Be my fay, Jonnet and Gill.
What wilt thou do, can thou me say, when Janet and Gill and Jill is away?
Then be it as it may, therefore care I now. I shew him that therefore cares. Some for labour waxeth wooed, and they have not an old hold. I know none that better fares.
And at which point we have stage direction of enter doctrine. Idleness, I think you're absolutely right, is three sheets to the wind a bit, isn't it?
Just a tad!
He's absolutely valued.
And it's lovely to see Janet and Jill. That's got a slightly different resonance today.
There's an indication here that idleness enters through the crowd somehow to say, oh, what, yeah. beware, a little stand of room, for I'm very cup shot.
Yes, yes, it's get out of the way. I'm not stable on my feet. I'm going to fall over you. Yeah, again, and we get this in interludes going forward for, you know, 100 odd plus years of a very crowded space. And the moment anyone's got to make an entrance, they've got to get through through the legs of whoever's in front. And of course, where that entrance is depends on the nature of the scene. Here, you can imagine idleness is deliberately going the most awkward route through the audience for comic effect and doing it very, very well. Right, as we've got the introduction of doctrine, I'm just wondering whether we should switch things up a little bit and swap a voice round, if anyone doesn't mind too much. Either Sasha or Liza, are you?
Don't mind.
You're happy, Sasha? So, Ian, if you'd like to read Idleness for a little bit, sure. As we have the introduction of doctrine, and just break it up a little bit and see what different voices do. To be fair, this is probably mostly doctrine's moment in the spotlight, but we have a third character on stage. How exciting.
Does anyone want to read Occupation as well?
If Ruth would like to step in early, would you like to be Occupation?
Yes, sure.
Yeah, let's do it that way. So it's a complete change of personnel. That's quite nice. Good thinking. Okay, enter of new doctrine. We've got a new idleness, we've got a new occupation. So, lovely. Go doctrine.
What, sirs? What play is this that ye make in this place? I am come to mend all my's by the help of God's grace.
Ah, that man hath an angry face.
Peace then, fool, and stand aside.
I pray God give thee evil grace. Beginnest thou now for to chide?
Sir, welcome mote ye be. And of your name, are you pray?
Doctrine, men clepen me, to teach cunning I am fain.
Doctrine, sir, ye be welcome. I have busied me full sad for to study and stir wisdom. Now of your company I am full glad.
What is your name, gentle brother?
Truly, my name is Occupation.
Welcome be ye above all other, with you to have communication. For all that's a good occupation, long God is pleased, and so am I. But occupation that toucheth to wrong doth men no good but villainy. For an thou wilt thee occupy in bodily works or arms deed, in penance or prayers wilfully, I doctrine to thee will take heed. For doctrine teacheth openly and clear virtuous life among us to set.
Hark, sir, ye shall hear, for now two shrews been met. Be my truth, I will me hide, like a mouse in yonder guard. For of him that gapeth wide, in faith I am evil afeard, I will be go.
By my faith thou shalt abide, and ere thou pass from me this tide, I will thee teach a word or two.
Whom, me, sir? I know the not, no never, I keep by heaven king.
Son, I will teach thee somewhat, for to get thy living.
Sir, in the name of heaven king, give him some information how he may get his living in the way of his salutation. That is all my desire.
Truly, brother occupation, that I will do without any hire, for every good man is bound to occupy him in cleanness. And he in good occupation be found, the fiend tempteth him much the less. Every man have enemies three, the devil, the world, and his own flesh. Which they been, I will tell thee. And how then they embattle him fresh, in pride and wrath the fiend tempteth man, and in envy that is so bad. These three sins in heaven began soon after Lucifer was made. The word tempteth man to sloth and covetise, that Adam and Eve first upbrought, when they would be as wise as was our Lord that them wrought. The flesh of gluttony failed next. Lechery was in Sodom and Gomorrah and other Mo. For these wiped well in our thought, for much harm there hath be due. For and thou in thee in temptation fell, occupy thee in cleanness, for the fiend on no man may stale, save in though that he find in idleness. In him will he hide for all the vices that there be. Idleness is the worst, I tell thee.
Out, whither may I flee? This angry man will beat me, and I will lie.
Of idleness cometh this, feats and strumpets, so have I rest. Again this default I wis, occupation I hold the best. But the most default nowadays on the people that I find, men teach their children wanton plays, and not as they should in kind. Some shall beshrew father and mother, and be for wanton as ye may see, such points and many other maketh many children never to thee. Set your children into school, ye that been good men of fame, maintain them not to play the fool, but let them learn some good for shame. For he that have neither land nor rent, coin nor cattle him to find of large expense, but be repent, soon shall be beg to be kind, that were reprieve. For why in thy good be law, and wilt not labour for him no more, but in idleness set him sore, then must be wax a feet, I lie not express. Beware, draw you to good, and labour for your life's food, and pray to him that died on rude, and beware of idleness.
Idleness not far, thinketh me, and so I told one right now.
Idleness, where is he?
Yonder, sir, as you may see, and scorneth both me and you.
Idleness, come near and learn of me some courtesy.
I shrew me, and I come there while thou art so angry.
I shall come hither, more grind thine head, and learn some good in thy youth. Thou would be like to beg thy bread, but thou draw thee from sloth. I say, boy, arise.
I pray thee, sir, go thy way. Me list not with thee to play.
I will thee teach in good fare. Now for to vex wise, therefore, boy, I say stand still, and some virtue that thou lear.
Go forth and do me none ill. I would ye were in that ditch both and fair.
I say, boy, scorn thou me now.
He doth as evil as he can.
He lieth. I make God a vow in record of this worthy man. Sir, saw me mock him to scorn? Nay, he lieth in his face.
It's a good point to pause, because there was something that was coming up. Getting the impression that idleness is... they're calling him boy. I think that's possibly quite explicitly... he is a young... explicitly younger. And that sort of works and makes sense of this relationship of someone who's needs to be taught the correct ways. I do love Idleness's responses here. The moment that doctrine came in, that man hath an angry face.
Any of us who have had students are going to recognise that.
Yeah. He's been beaten before.
Ruth?
Oh,
Well, I think boy can also be mean servant at this time, can't it? So
it can yeah.
But a clerk would be young. I mean, Idleness has described himself as a clerk, and that would be, you know, that could be someone very young.
Mm, yeah.
Maybe it was written for a school and they're all boys.
Mm. It started to feel that way, I have to say.
There's a certain morality tale that's sort of creeping in.
Oh, yeah.
Here.
Creeping in, you mean doctrines whacking great speeches.
I've found following everybody else's speeches quite easy, but doctrines to me are almost unassailable mass. They're very hard to read.
I mean, they're a series of, just a series of rules, isn't it? Set your children unto school, you know. Don't let them play the fool, you know. It's going through all the things, isn't it?
Reminds me of the Book of Proverbs in some ways.
Mm. Well, we've had explicit proverb work in other texts that we've touched on.
Kind of reminds me a lot of Piers Plowman, a kind of animated Piers Plowman, where you've got all these allegorical personifications coming to life and telling people what to do. And
I was thinking about Hawking Activa Vita.
Oh yes, yeah.
And his foul habit.
That's right. Yes.
It's interesting because we talk about morality plays. Ian brought up morality plays, and we think of those as the sort of the obvious morality plays that we think of, and sort of separate them a bit from some of the later interludes that we've got. But this seems to be doing both, and already, you know, much earlier than some of the other plays we've been doing. I find that really interesting. It's doing games with the same games that texts are doing 100 years in the future. And with very little difference, actually, apart from language shift and, general verse style. The actual games that are happening on stage, the dramaturgy here is not different. Fewer characters. But it's just so familiar. Okay, we got to...
I trow, boy, thy thrust be lorn, is it?
Yeah, you're not impressed with this boy, are you?
No, not at all. Oh, dear. I trow, boy, thy thrust be lorn, to goodness thou hast no grace.
Sir, ever to sloth and idleness he draweth him, morrow and eve, and I bid him oft express all that folly for to leave.
Son, to what living were thou born?
With milk and flour I began, I ween.
What? This boy driveth me to scorn.
Nay, God forbid, let that bane.
Have set hand on this book, and to thy law that thou lout.
Ah, see, sir, how I look. Ne'er hand I can it throughout. Ah, see here, sit up high.
But thou the better to thy book lout, be my fay thou shalt abide.
In good fay, ye say well, every man to labour in his cunning. This matter I trow well, I feel, else can we have but hard living. And idleness in household wend, me seemeth it much the worse.
Ye be ever my back friend, therefore have ye God's curse.
Son, have this book in thy hand, and learn in the name of God, as I do thee to understand, thou shalt be chastised with a rod, both even and morrow.
Ah, sir, he that thee hither brought, I pray God give him sorrow.
Theon, cross Christ, me speed, and in thy mind that it keep.
By my troth, I stand in dread, how I shall bring it to Hep. First let me rest a little while, my eyes be as aired.
Sir, this boy will you beguile. In the name of God, take heed, and learn him some lore.
Ah, sir, the devil be thy speed. Thou art again me evermore.
Son, learn thou never thy believe, thy paternoster, ave, and creed.
Nay, sir, so mote I achieve, thereto took I never heed, I not what it is.
Now by sweet St. James, thy father is the more to blame, and thy friends all insane, that should have taught thee this.
Meseemeth it were an arms deed to make him leave this lewd route.
I will not do be thy rede. Old fool, thou beginnest to dote. Thy beard beginneth to whore, some for weary falleth down, but in burg and town, and rise paradventure no more.
Truly, there lieth no man in ground, be he never so high of state, but he be strongly bound to occupy early or late. Prest is to pray and preach, and so, in penance and mass to show, dukes, earls, barons, and knights thereto, to maintain the land in virtue, and to fight therefore if need be, and stand by every true cause he wis, and take no need of me near thee, but to maintain them their right is. But now truth is driven aback, and simony is set up as a sire. Their maid is master, there is no lack of friendship, neither in session nor shire. But would God reason reigned age? And would ye gather all virtues to heap? To the word that ye show me, every man is bound to take keep. Lo, son, thou mayst see, to occupation thou art bound.
Ah, sir, but let thee never thee. Thou wouldst make me were, as is any hound, and that I hate. For aught that thou can tell me, shall none of you fell me, neither be strength compel me, early ne late.
Doctrine, sir, I pray you, tell us some of God's works that the common people may know, as do these worthy clerks.
I'm just going to pause there. Occupation setting up. Could you just explain? Well, I'm glad you asked the question. Could you just explain for everybody in the room some of the reasons why we should turn turn idleness from his path? We've got the setup. The play is obviously a setup to explain this point. It's really interesting. We've had this elsewhere, and I can't remember where, but we've got that, you know, thy father is the more to blame, my friends. You should have been taught this. It's not necessarily your fault that you haven't been taught this. You can learn to be good. And that's really interesting. You know, idleness is clearly finds this all very boring. You know, let me rest a little. Mine eye be as heavy as any lead. You know, I've and he doesn't want to look at the book. Doesn't want to look at the book.
It's almost like he's saying, I'm bored. Shut up.
Yeah.
Stirring his toys out the pram at this point, I think.
And when that doesn't work, he starts to get insulting.
Yeah. He's very more quick ambitious. To insult.
Yeah.
And much earlier on, there's that lovely line where when Doctrine says, come here, boy, and he says, I'm not coming there when you're looking that angry. I'm that's a whipping that I'm heading towards there. I'm not going anywhere near that.
I'm not coming near you, mate.
Yeah.
There's a clerk, so you know, when occupation is saying, oh, you know, teach him things like worthy clerks, it's like idleness is an unworthy clerk who's kind of let things fall by the wayside and isn't. Because presumably being a clerk would be, you know, holy orders as well.
I would assume so, yeah.
And his idleness is just fallen down on the job.
Yeah, it's interesting because we have these sort of clerk figures in, you know, with, you know, something like Dame Cirith, where, you know, Modi clerk who's up to no good and he's just sauntering around trying to bag married women. And, you know, idleness isn't doing that, but he's not doing his studies, is he? And considering how strict the learning would have been, I mean, you would be turning up early and you'd be leaving late, and you have to work hard to be idle, I would have thought.
Students have always been students since time immemorial.
Yeah. Nothing changes. Okay, let's. Occupation has set up teed everything up. Doctrine, tell us some of God's works, please, in your own time.
Summa Trinitate, I will begin, that with his might wrought all thing, nuem modenes without sin, angelorum to him obeying, a dei judicia for to abide, mysteria complenda for of light. It fill many one that tide from the place that mankind shall restore full right.
What man of men I would wit shall restore that place again?
their names been in legend right and are kept All Hallowed certain?
All Hallows? What be they? I pray you declare them openly.
Angels, patriarchs, and prophets to say, martyrs and confessors truly, virgins and others of green, clean life that died in pure chastity, that lived here without strife in cleanness and humility. Vere religiosi, the patriarchs called, atque gloriosi in their living, they told what would befall of diverse prophets and Christ's coming. John the Baptist said in his staven to all that veram penitentiam would chasen. Penitentiam adjete, that ye not listen, quia appropinquabit the kingdom of heaven. The postulists were in earth going, and Jesu Christ's laws read. Estorte fortes, said Jesu our king, look no tribulation make you feared.
I pray you, tell me in this place how apostles suffered tribulation.
Assame ferro peremte heeded was, some flamnis exusti brant in town, fragilis viverate, some foreboten. His sunt triumphatores, goddess friends and hath, here good deeds shall never be forgotten, for their blessed name in eternum merit.
Hear ye, sirs, all this breath, a draught of ale I had leaver.
This were a worthy company that the apostle loved day and night.
Vos estix lux mundi, to all the world they shall give light.
The martyrs had a glorious life, that for God's love would die so.
A sir, hic sun sancti, that never dread knife, but pro dei amore they suffered woe. O quam gloriosa here death is, and their blood shedding did us much good. The blood shedding would bring us to bliss, if that we be mild of mood. These blissed confessors lived cleanly, and taught about the word of Christ, before they sit in the great glory, where all that joy and mirth is most. Virgins, in their cleanness, meekly in earth here lived, these be clept All Hallows here whiz, and we have before meaved. On all holy churches pardon relieveth men out of sin, of these saints that is come, that is treasure, the holy church within. At Christ's own blood I will begin, his apostles, his martyrs, and afterward his officers that had been out of sin, lead their life here full hard, and the cleanness of the maidens all make us good ways unto heaven. All hallow and day their day men call, and worship men with mild Stephen.
Ah, sir, of men that liveth a day now, shall they in that number be?
Yea, sir, was ye see how? Fulgabunt justi, and thus say we, right wise men may not fail, it wiz, to have heaven for their travail. Rightfulness so high a virtue is, that justitia manet may not fail.
And how do they that have due sin, and amend them here, ere they die?
From heavenly bliss they may not win to ask mercy, they were ready.
What is mercy? That would I know. I pray you, do me to understand.
Mercy is the best seed, so, for above all works he shall stand. For as per lignum moribata mors certain, though a tree of death first arose, and per lignum quoque there again, by a tree our life was chose, and brought our bliss from death and strife. But even as Adam by a tree did fall, to turn our death to everlasting life, on a tree God died for us all. There was, O Loem, promissionis shrewd, that from Christ's body ran. Take heed, thou man, and be not lewd, for all our grace there first began. God's body thereto was all too rent, and made full of holes that ever shall run, to the blood of mercy that shall never stint in the salucane of sinful men. For his passion till doomsday his body shall never leave reigning, and of his blood of mercy every man get may, if they repent their evil living. There shall none be warned that blood of bliss every man thereof may get. That is the liquor. This is the liquor of mercy that every day whiz in holy church thou may it fet.
I thank Jesus, my Saviour, with all my heart and my speech, so free of that worthy liquor as well to poor as to rich.
Nay, sir, ye fail there. That is no just servants, but brother and brother. God bought all like dear and paid as much for one as for other. There is no poor, God saith before, but those that be in sin and out of virtue, they though have marks in store, then he shall be as rich as thou. The riches of heaven is not in gold, it is in virtue and clean life, as to the before is told that should be used in man and wife. At doomsday, God wot, who shall be rich, who shall be poor, and that for that day will be so hot that by gold men will set no store.
Sir, what has come to my mind? Why cleep ye that the great day?
For many skill that I find, I will declare then, if I may, then shall sit the greatest justice upon that ever sat in any place. All other justices before him shall stand, on all the lords that ever was, so many at once as we there shall see, never at once in one place come, for all that were and ever shall be in heaven, earth, and hell cometh to doom. That day will be the greatest weeping that ever was, say, in any place before. Many thousands their hands shall wring and curse the time that they were born. Therefore the great day cleep I, for those that shall be damned in that rout, shall weep more water with hear ye that than is in all the world round about. They shall never after cease weeping, the water from their eyes shall run. Therefore think on this day of reckoning, and ever after hate thou sin, and in haste thy life amend.
Will I never work begin, but I think on the end.
I'm just going to pause there, but we will backtrack before we go forward in a moment. The way doctrine speaks throughout that, I find really interesting, because idleness obviously breaks in once to say, dear God, someone get me a beer. And I think it's because doctrine is deliberately a bit boring and obscure at the beginning of the speech, at the very beginning, because he's doing a lot of Latin into English. And it, even if you do know the Latin and you can follow it, it's nowhere near as convincing as what comes later. And I wonder if that's a structural point, is that we're supposed to be drawn into it. And that's why idleness doesn't say anything from this that point onwards.
These people heard Latin, they didn't necessarily understand it, but they heard it every Sunday at church, as well as at burials, baptisms, etc. And I think there was a reaction they had to just the sound of Latin being spoken that's hard for us to comprehend now. It's why in Faustus all the magic is in Latin. It, you know, even post-Reformation it had a dramatic effect. And I think I agree with you, the beginning of that speech is loaded with Latin, but I think it sort of subconsciously cues people to sit still and listen.
Apart from idleness. You know,
it brings them back to the place where they are in church. And it's also a way to say, I'm an authority because I know this language, so you have to listen to what I say. Overall, I think doctrine's arguments are very elegantly constructed. This wouldn't be out of place in something by the Pearl Poet or even in Piers Plowman.
I find it very convincing as it goes on, and it's more emotive as well as it goes, as it gets into it. And rather than sort of the starting point, it gets increasingly into something that is quite profound in places. I think it does a really good job. Sasha?
There's also, if you don't mind me bringing in a modern reference here, as I was listening to that, you remember in The Simpsons where Homer's in church and he's trying to listen to the races, and the next thing that happens during the sermon, he pops up and goes, "Woohoo! Yay! Hey, praise me!" That kind of thing. It kind of reminded me of that, that bit, you know, in a way, idleness is that Homer J. Simpson character, is that Homer Simpson character that amplifies and, you know, that sense of resonance as well, you know, like you were saying about the listening aspect of doctrine. Well, idleness is almost representing the common man, in a way, who really and truly, deep down, is like, what? Really? Yeah, look, beer. Oh, beer. Just to kind of highlight the whole thing, it just reminded me of that little snippet in The Simpsons.
Just pick up on what Liza was saying about it being like the Pearl Poets or like Piers Plowman. Where Doctrine talks about the, you know, through a tree our death first arose, by a tree our life was chosen. That's pure Piers Plowman. That's definitely feels like that. And it's quite alliterative as well.
Well, it's the thing is also that occupation is there to prompt and ask questions and to get things wrong as well and be corrected. Mm. So you can be a good person, as it were, and also still get correction. And I think that's actually quite nicely structured. But it's the fact that it is that idleness drifts out of this. You know, this is in theory for idleness's sake. But we don't know where, and I don't want to say too much on that front until we go into what follows, because I think that will answer what possible questions I might be about to ask. But no, I think once Doctrine gets into it, I think it works. It's actually very effective. By its nature, Doctrine is long and will be a long speech, and there's no getting around that. That's always going to be what Doctrine does. Well done, Doctrine, by the way. Some of that was tricksy. Additional thoughts before we go into the home straight, and we really are into the home straight. It's not a long one today. Does anyone want to swap round? Anyone want to pick up the cudgels again? So Sasha is idleness again. Ruth is if you go for Doctrine,
Shall I step back in as occupation?
Yeah, let's try it that way. Let's try it that way. Let's see how that goes. Okay. Let's go back a couple of lines. Occupation. You've just heard Doctrine's wonderful oration there. Will I never work begin? Go from there, I think.
Will I never work begin, but I think on the end.
By my troth, no more will I, for I have no will to be a clerk. Of my book I am weary. I was not wont to know such work. This book is not worth a rush. 10 such are not worth a bean. Be my fay. I will him wish and make him fair and clean. Good, give me a little water that I may wash my book. For though my master chide and chatter and their occupation here of smatter, I will no more hereon look.
What, son, what play is this?
By God, it is never the worse.
I will tell thy master, Iwis.
Therefore hath thou God's curse.
Doctrine, sir, take heed how your clerk shent his book.
Sir, the devil be thy steed, who bade thee hither look.
Ah, lewd losel, what shapes be in these? Thou takest thee to fantasies. Far sit down, thou shalt not choose.
Ah, sire, here be many butterflies, both white and brown. For cockish blood, take thee thine hood, and I will smite them down.
Ah, thou dost well and fine. I will thee tame by Saint Austin, be thou never so wild. Occupation, lay hand on him, have do, and myself will help thereto. Come forth, my fair child.
Come no near, I charge thee now. For as thou do, I make a vow. I will strike thee to the heart. Would God my dagger were ground.
Set hand on him anon this stand. Let him not start.
Come forth thou shalt, Margrave thy teeth.
Out upon the strong thief. Wilt thou me spill?
Have here one, two, and three. Idleness, now think on me, and hold thy tongue still.
And I live, I will be a wreck. Some of your heads I will break, for ye have made me wroth.
How sayest thou? That let me see.
Nay, but God, it is he. In record of all this company, he did this shrew you both.
Fie on thee, harlot, with thy glossing. Thou shalt have more by heaven, king, to teach thee wets true.
Oh, mercy, master, I cry mercy. Forgive me this, and readly our law will I shew.
In good faith thou shalt have more, but thou leave thy idleness, and but thou study and labour also in all the works of cleanness. For God taught his disciples all, to thee and to other teach will I. Vigilate ergo, great and small, nescitis qua hora that ye shall die, we know none hour of our dying. Therefore in prayers ever should we be, for with our paternoster we should worship heaven king, and his blessed mother with an our way.
I say now mercy with heart and speech, forever to you will I obedient be, and I will do as ye me teach in all the works of honesty. Paternoster, I will begin.
Lo, how little maistry it is to bring in a child in youth. Friends, take heed to this, and ever draw ye from sloth. And thus, had he had no teaching, he would have cursed his friends all. And now he may in time coming be a good man, and so he shall.
Art thou sorry for thy miss, the which to thee I will rehearse?
Aye, sir, that I am, Iwis. Therefore I cry God and you mercy.
The 10 commandments thou break evermore, thy 5 wits thou kept them ill.
Truly that I repent sore, I will amend with all my will.
The deeds of mercy dost thou not fulfil, to poor, sick, prisoners also.
I will amend it with good will, and I may have life thereto.
Now thou forsakest thine idleness, and hereafter will dread shame. Here I cast on thee a cloth of cleanness, and cleanness shall be thy name.
Worthy master, I thank thee, and you occupation also, of this man that is so free, and to you will I ever draw to.
Now I'm glad with all my heart that ever I met with thee in this place. So fair art thou now convert, from folly and fantasy turned to grace, with so mild Stephen.
Master, I pray you for charity, that ye would tell me what power hath our Helady in heaven.
Above all the women that ever were, God chose Mary unto this, in her body him to bear, et peralegit eum deus. Sicut lilium among thorns growing, sic amica mea inter filius, so is his mother most shining, passing all the women that ever was. Witness at her assumption, when the angel said, Que is ista qui descendit fro desert adown, etan quam fumi virgula, et sicut aurora consurgens, never sun shining so bright, with all delights of sweetness, that they saw that glorious sight, the ascension of Christ alone. When she to heaven was come, God said to his angel anon, Haec est regina virginum, qui genuit regum in her body so clean, qui famulantur angeli every day. This same body that ye seen here, that ye here seen, within the blessed sides I lay. God said to her, Amica, veni, veni de Libano in flesh and fell, veni coronaberis in heaven most high, as queen of heaven and empress of hell. And lady of all the world she is, her power is of greatest state. Whoso honor her with our ways, all his disease she will abate. So he be clean and out of sin, for in will for to amend, in every work that he will begin, our dear lady will be his friend. And but he stand in that degree, I would not give for his prayers a pair.
I thank my Lord in Trinity that ever I met with you here.
Thank we him of might most, Father and Son in Trinity, abater of the fiend's boast, wholly my heart I yield to thee.
He us brings to good end that died for us on Good Friday, and Mary his mother be our friend, unto thy Son as ye best may.
He that is registered for the right heir, that doubtful doomsman that sitteth enthroned, keep you ever out of all despair, and grant you his blessing, every one. Amen.
Amen.
And the moral of the story is, if children don't do what you say, beat them and they will learn.
I think amen is probably meant to be said by everyone.
Yes, yeah. I think it is. It seems to be turn up in quite a lot of plays, and it does seem to be a point of commonality between everybody.
God, that Latin is horrible.
You did it very well.
I was in awe of how you handled it.
Ruth, you're well done, because I couldn't have coped with all that lot.
No, you.
I wasn't sure what that word I would not give for his prayers of pear. I think it maybe it's peri. I don't know.
Yeah,
possibly, or maybe the fruit.
Yeah, it could be a pear. I
it is fruit. It just looks sounds funny.
Yeah, it you know his it's not like it could be peer. It's weird, isn't it? You can't quite win with it, can you?
So, wait, what do we think idleness does to the book?
I assume rips it up.
Well,
because it's talking about butterflies, so I'm thinking that's individual pages.
Yeah.
He talks about washing it and dunking it, which indeed he may do, but it does talk about the book being shent, and that suggests ripping. And I say the butterflies, I think that's pages, isn't it?
Mm.
Oh, it's very active, this last sequence. You know, he gets a good thwacking, bit more beating. And then you get this wonderful, to the audience from Occupation, almost probably while, I don't know if there's an additional beating happening at that point, but he's just going, idleness suddenly goes down. I'm doing me work. Look, I am. And it's just to the audience. Look how little it took to get him to do some work.
Yeah, just that threat of... putting him into submission or killing him or, you know, just that little threat of violence. That's all it takes with him. But like I say, it's like that pestilent child syndrome. If you don't have any boundaries or rules per se, then that child could be almost like the Homer J. Simpson that I was mentioning, character, and just go completely out of control. You could be completely idle. You could do what the heck you like and get into chaos. But without that discipline, that's what it's really saying. If you don't have that kind of framework, you can't actually have a semblance of order. You can't go through your life literally blasé like idleness does.
Well, the thing about Homer, like The Simpsons almost is a morality play because everyone is so archetypal. And that's the thing about Homer is he's incapable of changing. He always reverts to Homer, no matter what situation he's put into or what he has to do to get through that situation. And idleness does change. Presumably, if he'd been raised right, he wouldn't need to be beaten.
Yes, I mean, this is
that's what I mean.
Yeah. This is a desperate rearguard action, isn't it? It's, you know, we've tried explaining to him. He's not been brought up properly. So he has to undergo a bit of a short, sharp shock.
Yeah.
He's back to Tory party conferences of old.
Yeah, but also, I mean, Ruth, you will know chapter and verse on this, but to a medieval morality sort of person... Did they see corporal punishment as like a good and necessary sort of thing?
Oh yes, oh yes. I mean, schoolboys were often beaten to instill the lesson in them because of the belief that pain made doctrine go in better. So yeah, I think this would have been seen as something good.
Mm. And he gets again, it's something we've seen elsewhere. He gets a new piece of clothing. To demonstrate that he has been washed clean, as it were, and a new name, which are tropes that we find all over the other morality plays and interludes that we've looked at. It's an ever-present theme.
But it's interesting to contrast the huge, you know, turn to repentance at the end of this with like will to like, which is later. 100 years later, possibly, get that moment of repentance at all. You just get Nicole newfangled going off with the devil, but no moment of repentance at all.
No. You
got the speeches of contrition, but of the four little speeches you got, only one urged repentance. Mm. The others were just like, well, take example by me, because I guess it's too late now.
But this is definitely about metamorphosis, isn't it? I'm going to turn into conversion.
Yes. Mm.
Yeah. It's I've just find the one note I've got on this. Though this is not a fully fledged play, I'm just going to put it down this, what I've just picked up, and just go, no, oh, this is a play. This is a fully fledged play. It's a very simple play, but it's a play.
No, it's like with the Pixar films. You've got something at the start before the actual film.
Yeah. You know, so it's a short. It's a short.
Yeah.
I mean, it's you know, possibly 40 minutes, maybe less. But that's a, it's, you know, it's a decent chunk of an, you know, it's an entertainment. It's no, not that much shorter than, you know, what we were doing with Mankind last week. You know, it's slightly shorter. It's complete. It's definitely not a fragment. That seems to, it seems all to be here. So yeah, I'm really pleased by this, just simply for containing so much that we have later, and really seeing it all explicitly laid out. That this isn't some form that sort of, you know, that shifts and changes so much that, in fact, actually, there's a huge amount of continuity over a great period of time until it sort of drops out, you know, much later in the day. And yeah, I'm really pleased we've done this. I mean, it's a really interesting thing. It's it's difficult to do the ending today. I think it is very difficult, you know, without presenting this in context and you know, doing something to set this up, because I don't know how you could present that ending, because it's tricky. I think it's dynamic and it's very well done, but yeah, it's fascinating.
It could be done as a series of short plays if you wanted to actually do it for real on stage. I think it can be certainly easily done by the way it's read.
Oh yeah.
You know, I mean, like, I don't see it as a standalone play on its own. It could literally just be a strong opening to a double bill, and then you'd have to finish with something a little bit more, you know, forthcoming in terms of the morality plays. But if you found the right one to pair it up with, I don't know.
It's the way I see it is, you know, it's definitely in the running to do as part of, you know, when we can do live shows again. You know, the live shows we do, you know, sort of script in hand, we record them like a radio show. I think with an introduction to set this up, or a themed evening with other bits and pieces, say in the first half, talking about the kind of plays that we're doing, and then in the second half, you just present this, would work very well. You know, I don't see a lot here that I would go, that's ridiculously long, I need to cut it down. I might put some trims in, but pretty much it's a very presentable thing, and it only has three actors. I mean, you know, it's cheapness incorporated. It's great. Ian, as this is your first time, how have you found this text?
I think it feels like it's the earliest equivalent I've ever heard of theatre and education. So, you know, the shows that go around to schools today saying you need to eat a balanced diet, and you've got a character that's a bunch of grapes or a character or vegetables that all chat to each other about what makes the balanced diet. Here you've got the equivalent of that being religion, doctrine, occupation, work and religion together to face off against meat and beer, you know, two terrible things. So I thought it was a fascinating read along. It feel that kind of vibe, especially towards the end, is cleanness. He brings us to good end and death for us on Friday. It's like he's saying that to the audience, sort of like in a child, he died us on Good Friday. You know, sort of that kind of meter then kicks in. Of a very young person being told what to do. So yeah, it was great, and everybody read really well. Really exciting.
Right. Greg, any thoughts as we're winding down? We're winding down relatively early tonight, but I kind of don't see any point of pushing on if this we found most of our thoughts. Greg?
No, nothing in particular tonight.
Sasha, any final thoughts from you?
No, except that it's very good fun. The characters are well rounded, and I look forward to seeing if it goes any further.
I really would like to test this with an audience. I think it's got legs. Liza.
Well, I would, you know, as with so much medieval text, I would be so curious to know who wrote it and what else they wrote. Because, you know, for the kind of play that it is really nicely written. And when you think, again, I know we don't have a precise date on this, but when you think it was written as the country was either in the middle of or recovering from the trauma of the Wars of the Roses, where they, so there's much less of the these kids today vibe that there is with the later plays, and there's a, yeah, the world is pretty terrible. How do we not all become terrible people? How do we do the right thing?
I mean, it's interesting when you compare it with Lucidus and Dubius, which is in the same manuscript. There's no guarantees it's by the same person or anything, which is a very different proposition, which is very much a learned schoolmaster and their ex-pupil who sort of come back and sort of spars with him on points of doctrine. And it's very much like a Q&A. Here is a question. Here's my learned answer. But then it gets more dynamic as it goes. It's actually really quite interesting how the ex-student sort of starts pushing back on points of doctrine. It becomes a genuine debate rather than just a Q&A. Though some of the Q&A sections are just frankly bizarre in places. They're fascinating. It's where they've got the answer or the doctrine, the point of they want to get across, but they haven't got a very good question to set it up. And so there's a few moments where it's sort of, that's not a question that anyone would ever ask. But the structure of the piece demands it. And it'd be interesting, actually, now that we've done both, is actually to sit down and properly compare the two and see if they are from the same branch of thought. Because I think you're right. It feels like it's a theatre and education piece, isn't it? It's
that. I'd love to know who commissioned it, you know, because I'm sure it will have had a patron who said, I'd really like to have a performance of this and I'm going to write this and put it together. And I'd love to know where it was performed, you know, if it was done for a country house or in the court, or I just don't know. It's in a school. I don't know.
Yeah, it's not like when we get to Tudor interludes where we've got a sense of what the setup and the potential people, you know, we just don't know what's going on. You know, we know there are people sponsoring you know, this kind of dramatic effort. We know that, you know, the various pre-Tudor kings are doing this kind of activity. We just don't have any detail and we don't know where to put anything.
If you have traveling players, they could go around and perform this, say, in a in a village square or in front of the church, or, you know, there are lots of different kind of outdoor possibilities for it.
Yeah, it's just it is frustrating. We just don't have the data on these things. And it sort of goes in that box with the other sort of outliers of medieval drama, which are not mystery plays or not, you know, clear morality plays that seem to fit within something else. And this text is one of those outliers that I'm really, really glad we've looked at. Right. Well, thank you very much, everyone. We're going to go into housekeeping in just a moment, but I'd just like to thank all my readers for this session, and say this will be out online. If you'd like to have a look at Lucidus and Dubius, we did a read through of that, and that's on the podcast, so you can listen to that at your leisure if you so wish. Otherwise, an awful lot of other interludes that do very similar things to this are available. I'm not even going to attempt to list them now. Thank you very much, everyone, and goodbye.
Bye.
Bye. Bye.